"Why does she cry?" she said. "The prayers, they hurt her." Polly spun around when something touched her shoulder. It was Tonka. "Mrs. Enid says we're to get to work," she says. "She says the guards come around and check." It was women's work, and therefore monotonous, back-breaking and social. It has been a long time since Polly had got her hands in a washtub, and the ones here were long wooden troughs where 20 women could work at once. Arms on either side of her, squeezed and pummeled, wrung out garments and slapped them into the rinsing trough behind them. Polly joined in and listened to the buzz of conversation around her. It was gossip, but bits of information floated in it like bubbles in the washtub. A couple of guards had taken liberties, that is, more than had already been taken, and had apparently been flogged for it. This caused much comment along the tub. Apparently, some big milord from Ankh-Morpork was in charge of things and had ordered it. He was some kind of wizard, said the woman opposite. They said he could see things happening everywhere and lived on raw meat. They said he had secret eyes. Of course, everyone knew that city was the home of abominations. Polly, industriously rubbing a shirt on a washboard, thought about this, and thought about a lowland buzzard in this upland country, and some creature so fast and stealthy that it was only a suggestion of shadow. She took a spell on the copper boilers, ramming the stewing garments onto the bubbling surface, and noted that in this place, without weapons of any sort, she was using a heavy stick about 3 feet long. She enjoyed the work in a dumb kind of way. Her muscles did all the necessary thinking, leaving her brain free. No one knew for sure that the Duchess was dead. It more or less didn't matter. But Polly was sure of one thing. The Duchess had been a woman. Just a woman, not a goddess. Oh, people prayed to her in the hope that their pleas would be gift-wrapped and sent on to Nuggan, but that gave her no right to mess with the heads of people like Wazza, who had enough trouble as it was. Gods could do miracles. Duchesses posed for pictures. Out of the corner of her eye, Polly saw a line of women taking large baskets from a platform at the end of the room and stepping out through another doorway. She dragged Igorina away from the wash trough and told her to join them. "And notice everything," she added.
"Yes, Corp," said Igorina.
"Because I know one thing," said Polly, waving at the piles of damp linen, "and it's that this lot will need the breeze." She went back to work, occasionally joining in the chatter for the look of the thing. It wasn't hard. The washerwomen kept away from some subjects, particularly ones like husbands and sons. But Polly picked up clues here and there. Some were in the keep. Some were probably dead. Some were out there somewhere. Some of the old women wore the Motherhood Medal, awarded to women whose sons had died for Borogravia. The bastard metal was corroding in the damp atmosphere, and Polly wondered if the medals had arrived in a letter from the Duchess, with her signature printed on the bottom, and the son's name squeezed up tight to fit the space. "We honour and congratulate you, Mrs. L. Lapchick of Well Lane, Munns, on the death of your son, Otto Pyotrhan Lapchick, on June 25 at blank." The place was always censored in case it brought aid and comfort to the enemy. It astonished Polly to find that the cheap medals and thoughtless words did, in a way, bring aid and comfort to the mothers. Those in Munns who had received them wore them with a sort of fierce, indignant pride. She wasn't sure she trusted Mrs. Enid very much. She had a son and a husband up in the cells, and she'd had a chance to size up Blouse. She'd be asking herself, what's more likely? He gets them all out and keeps them safe, or that there's going to be an almighty mess that might well harm us all? And Polly couldn't blame her if she went with the evidence. She was aware of someone talking to her. "Hmm?" she said. "Look at this, will you?" said Shufti, waving a sodden pair of men's long pants at her. "They keep putting the colours in with the whites." "Well, so what? These are enemy long johns," said Polly. "Yes, but there's such a thing as doing it properly. Look, they're putting this red pair and all the others are going pink." "And I used to love pink when I was about 7. It is an established fact that despite everything society can do, girls of 7 are magnetically attracted to the colour pink." "But pale pink? On a man?" Polly looked at the next tub for a moment and patted Shufti on the shoulder. "Yes, it is very pale, isn't it? You'd better find a couple more red items," she said.
"But that'll make it even worse," Shufti began.
"That was an order, soldier," Polly whispered in her ear, "and add some starch."